The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive.
Hey guys, this is Mel. This is going to be a special rebroadcast of an episode that we actually originally put up back in August of last year. And unfortunately, you know, I wish I could be putting up under better circumstances or more positive circumstances, but the episode that we aired, the episode that's about to re-air, is an episode where I did an interview with Ramzi Abed, aka Brock Doom, who is a very interesting independent filmmaker that I've known. He's from Texas, so I've known him more than a decade, actually. And he actually has been doing a lot of work in the adult film industry space. He actually played Donald Trump in a movie, hilariously enough. But unfortunately, the reason that I'm reposting this is that he recently, I think as it was maybe 3 or 4 days ago, it was last week, his apartment was burned down in a fire in LA. And I think it was like an electrical fire or something. I mean, details are still coming out. It's being investigated. But it's pretty tragic. And I mean, his hands got burned really bad. He's currently homeless. I mean, they're working on his apartment and fixing it and rebuilding it, but who knows how long that'll take. Beyond that, he lost, I think, almost everything, all of his clothes, most of his personal belongings, all of his movies, both like the movies he watched and a lot of the stuff that he made, if not all of it. I know there were, you know, his computer got destroyed, his hard drives got destroyed. There were things that he was in the process of working on and editing that I think, you know, are just now gone, you know. So it's pretty tragic. And the reason I wanted to re-air this episode is kind of bring him to the forefront again and also let people know about what was going on and give them ways to help if they were so inclined, because this is one of those things where you never know when shit like this is going to happen. It's just, you know, it's just craziness, you know. And I've narrowly avoided shit like this, and those are stories for a future podcast or whatever, but I totally empathize with the guy. Just recently I had some minor things stolen, and it gutted me because it had little just like script notes and stuff that I'd worked on. But like the creatives, you can replace, I mean, his health is, he's in good health other than his hand, so that's great. You can replace stuff, that's true, but the creative shit, I mean, beyond just like recapturing footage or reshooting things or whatever, it's so hard to recreate those things, you know, beyond just the logistics of what you might think. You know what I mean? So I just really feel for the guy is what I'm saying, because I kind of recently went through a much, 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 much smaller version of that. So I'm putting this up in the hopes that some of you guys will reach out and help. A few of his friends have set up a couple methods to give. If you just want to send any money through PayPal, you could send it to bloodshot@msn.com. That's bloodshot at msn.com. And that's if you want to donate via PayPal. And then there's actually, I was just informed of an official GoFundMe page, and it's on GoFundMe, and the title is Brock Doom versus Apartment Fire. And I'll have links in the description, as well as the picture on the GoFundMe page will probably be the picture for the podcast, so it'll be easy to find. It's a picture of Ramzi, you know, with his hands bandaged. And if you can, search out his stuff, be it in the you know, adult film space or the independent film space, whatever floats your boat. But if you can find his stuff to purchase, go out and do it. I think a lot of that, most of the deals he has struck, I think a lot of the proceeds go directly to him. So see if you can find his movies on Amazon, stream them, maybe find his picture sets on other sites. Ramzi Abed, again, is his name, and his name in the adult film industry is Brock Doom. If you are so inclined to help, I really encourage that you do. And also check out this podcast once more if you haven't. Once more, if you've heard it for the first time, if you haven't, because I think he says some really, really interesting stuff, and he looks at things in a very, very specific and compelling way. So here once again is Ramsey Abed. Get well soon, Ramsey. Positive thoughts going out your way. All right, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Barely Living the Dream. I am your host, Mel House, and today with me is my, I guess I can call you an old friend because I've known you for a while.
Yeah.
Ramsey Abed. Abed? Abed? Did that pronounce it right?
Abed.
Abed, okay. Abed. I always wonder. I'm like, let me not butcher this. No, I'm just like, fine. It's Ramsey.
but names, yeah, I think, are arbitrary.
Yeah. What I think the first time I met you was probably, God, that was a while ago, but it was at the
2007.
That was
September.
The convention here? Was that
September
here?
In San Jose.
That's right.
At Silicon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah. You were promoting...
That's where I first met you.
Yeah,
Devil's News, right? Yeah, it was called Black Dahlia Movie at the time.
Right, yeah. I always thought it was another movie because of the title change, and I'd forgotten about that. But yeah, that was a crazy convention. I was there for Closet Space, I believe.
Yeah.
And we traded, right. I think we traded DVDs.
And you were from Texas, which
yes,
I am
yeah,
as well.
Exactly. And that's why I immediately started following you and made sure to keep tabs on you because you were a fellow Texas guy.
Yeah, and I was into ND Slate. I used to write for them and stuff.
Right.
And I think I saw you in there too. And so I think maybe, right?
Yeah,
you were
in ND Slate. Yeah, I was on the cover a couple
of
times.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Jeez. Yeah. It all comes together.
I have a really good memory because I smoke a lot of marijuana.
Public service announcement.
Yeah.
I guess we'll start at the beginning. So you said you mentioned you're from Texas.
Yes.
Dallas, correct?
Yeah.
And you were there until?
I was there. I mean, I was there till. Well, I went to high school there.
Yeah.
After high school, I came out to L.A., sort of. I went to school at Pitzer, which is a college out in Claremont.
Uh-huh.
And then I worked for just a minute on a couple of TV shows, and I was a production assistant, PAing for America's Funniest Home Videos at the end of its run, and some other pretty funky TV shows like The Epic Adventures of Tarzan and some educational stuff for a company that was... mostly geared towards science and technology stuff. It's actually backed by Scientologists. Very interesting. And then I moved back to Dallas for a while, and then I came back out here. So I was officially, I say, I'm back in L.A. or in L.A. from 2002 onwards. But moved here in... We got the place in September, and we moved out here in October of 2002.
Okay. Now, all your film project, or at least the shorts, and then Black Dahlia and In a Spiral State, was any of that done in Texas or all done out here?
No, that was all done out here. I actually have a couple of technically they're features. One's been finished called Clay Fields, which premiered at Dallas Video Festival way back, that was done in Dallas, and another one called Upside Down Town, which has never been edited. Those are both features from shot in Dallas. I hope to cut them one day.
Yeah.
Clay Fields is done, but...
Were those done before the others?
Yeah, those were done before the others and before I moved here. Upside Downtown was done about the same time I did The Tunnel, and then a little bit afterwards. We finished it before I moved out here.
Uh-huh.
But that was also... That's actually a really cool little anthology film. I don't know. I'm really weird with projects. I used to be all about finishing all the projects, but sometimes I think it's really cool to not finish the projects,
right.
Because then they can stay, they can kind of ruminate, and they exist as this thing, and they kind of give you, they give me more reason to live.
Yeah.
Because, and they kind of help me, deal with time, because the passing of time is very difficult, because friends die, family people die, things happen, all this fucked up stuff with life, so when you have your projects just sit on the shelf, it's or a project or film, it's great if a film can be done really quickly, but sometimes it's not that. You look at it as not a curse for a film to take 6 years. It's you got to live sort of in that world for 6 years. 6 years from then, you'll be like missing that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So I missed The Devil's Muse. That was probably one of the most interesting periods of my life. I mean, that movie took almost 6 years to shoot.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. Like, we'd shoot the majority of the films uh-huh. in a film, and then I was shooting pickups and, like, kind of writing the film as I went. Uh-huh. Like, there was a lot of it that was written, but then I was kind of, like, I changed the movie, whatever. And then we cut it, like, 13. We cut 13 different versions of the movie over a year period with my editor, Wes Pastor, who cut that movie. Is like a 4 or 5-time Emmy nominated editor. Wes, you'll probably hate me for not knowing this. If you won one time at one of the times, but I know he's been nominated like recently. He did like The Bachelor and all these other big TV shows.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting because my movie has a reality kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
It's very surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. So when, Let's go over the timeline again. What year was it that The Devil's Muse finally came out, where it became?
Okay, so I premiered it myself. I used to show stuff at film festivals and submit to film festivals.
Yeah.
And it's strange, too, because I have a good relationship with people from film festivals, but I don't really send my movies to festivals at all anymore, or at least I haven't forever. And with The Devil's Muse, I sort of did this weird thing with a bunch of people. We did this huge event downtown. We booked all these places and did these gallery shows. And I did a theatrical at the Lemley that was downtown, which is no longer there, that theater.
Yeah.
But so that happened in early 2007, but the movie didn't find distribution till later. And it didn't come out actually till 2008. Uh-huh. So it came out in 2008, and then digitally, I'd signed a contract with Cinetic for the digital rights, Cinetic Rights Management, which is John Floss's company, and I actually signed it in 07. I didn't deliver the movie to them for, I think, 4 years. Because I didn't know if it was really going to make any money. I was very stupid.
Yeah.
So Halo 8, who is, again, still around, I think, in some capacity, they put out The Devil's Muse, which I now, strangely enough, all those rights are back with me at this time. But that movie came out then. We put out a bitch and 2-disc. They did an incredible job on the DVD. It had like 4 Easter eggs. I got to really be involved with it. The second disc was the full soundtrack, which was David Jay from Bauhaus and Love and Rockets that did the music. You know, it came out. I hope people watched it. I mean, a lot of people don't like it, but I think there are some people who like it. So that's good.
Oh, yeah.
I like the people who like it.
That's one thing that always will stick with me is like when we gave each other copies of the films that we were promoting at that show. And I remember I got home and she was my girlfriend at the time. We watched it and we both were really into it. We both really enjoyed it. And it was nice to see someone else that was kind of working at the same, more or less the same level, like doing something super awesome and like vision, the vision was there, you know what I mean? Like it was kind of, I was like, this is definitely not the same old stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like to see more movies like that. So
yeah, I wish I could do them with bigger budgets and bigger crews you know, I mean, it has a lot of, it's interesting, a lot of times people watch the stuff that I do and they're like, yeah, like a lot of the criticism, people don't like the movies because I think that they're expecting them to be delivered on a much larger scale. You shouldn't even be trying. Like, I shouldn't be so ambitious, basically, and try to do all these things. That's like, you can't fucking do that with a DV camera. I'm like, why not? Like, I'm fucking doing it.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good, but it...
Yeah, you're still doing it, yeah.
It exists. How are you going to take people to a place unless you take them to that place?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So... I guess before that, you had done a short of some note.
Yeah, The Tunnel.
The Tunnel.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That was a short film that was shot on Super 16 that was done back in 2001, August. We shot it very quickly in about 2.5 days. We made a 36-minute short film. The first day we shot like 46 or 47 setups, which is pretty insane. But we also built sets. And we had this really incredible, huge, huge, huge warehouse that was a haunted house off season. So they had some pre-built sets that we could accentuate or change or whatever.
Yeah.
And really amazing. And Lloyd Kaufman from Troma was in it. Mark Borchardt from the documentary American Movie, who's the filmmaker who made Coven, which is kind of a cult short film. And Masumi Max, who's this amazing pinup fetish model, kind of legendary at this point. She and I have known each other for quite a while now, but she was in that film. That's the first time I've ever worked with her. And a lot of really cool people worked on it. Tons of well-known, Texan filmmakers also were involved with that film. Said I wouldn't say, but, you know, it's might as well. But the guy who cut it, who edited it, was David Lowery, who is an incredible filmmaker, who did Ain't Them Bodies Saints, and also the now upcoming, probably when this comes out, it's already out, but the movie Pete's Dragon for Disney. So that's pretty bitchin'.
Yeah,
he totally did that. And a lot of other amazing filmmakers like Mark Hozak, who's an incredible writer in his own right, Clay Lyford, who's a good friend, who also has directed a number of films. I was really interested in working with filmmakers mm-hmm. on my crew and in my cast. That's why I cast Lloyd and Mark. I really love working with filmmakers and artists and musicians and people like that.
Yeah.
I tend to cast them a lot. That's, if you look at The Devil's Muse also and In a Spiral State, and basically everything I do, I really gravitate towards people who are not like binary in their existence. They do like a million different things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that went out and did a lot of stuff. It played 40 festivals. I just was telling you kind of off before this, but that I would like to, I'm going to put it out, I think, on the online, maybe for free, just for people to see it.
Yeah.
The 15-minute version is the one that most people have seen.
Yeah.
But as David, actually, and I both would attest, the 36-minute version is the only way to see it. It's really the right
cool.
film.
Cool. So. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd really like to check it out. Sounds, from everything I've heard about it, sounds like something I'd really be into.
Yeah. Again, very polarizing. You'll either really love it or really hate it. But I know you, so I think you might dig it.
Sweet. Can't wait. Yeah. So I guess fast forward again. So after The Devil's Muse, your next project was In a Spiral State, correct?
Yeah. And In a Spiral State was a chance for me to kind of do something really quickly, because I wanted to do something that was not going to take as long as The Devil's Muse. It only took about a year to turn around. Which is pretty awesome. I mean, it was a little bit more free form. I knew that I wanted to do a film that was about a bunch of different people. I knew I wanted to do a film that was hinged in the idea of consciousness and identity. No. So there were two different main character stories going on. It was either that you could take the film that it's either in this woman's head, you know, who's meditating, or it's either this, or it's this writer who's writing the story that you're watching, or maybe it's both of them, and they have a connection in the film. So it's just like this really crazy experiment, and we did it for very little money, which was the right way to do it, and it was a viral sensation. It was almost universally loathed on those websites, but I mean, it got like, but it was, I found out from one of the actors in one of my next projects, who's like, dude, congratulations. He's like, I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you're in the top five. I'm like, top five what? He's like, you're in the top five on Pirate Bay. And I'm like, like, how is that good? I never have made, I still have yet to really make any money on mainstream films. Mainstream, very loose word.
Yeah.
But indie films that I've done with actors and all the stuff that you do in a mainstream fashion, that the crazy thing, though, it's pretty bit amazing. I mean, these people did not like it, because I went on some of the websites just to see the comments.
Yeah.
And the people were like daring each other to watch the film.
Oh, man.
But it had been seen by like millions of people.
Right.
And it was like in the top five with Inglourious Basterds and I can't remember what other movies. And it was because it was something that I knew that would work, I guess, or I thought it would work. But I wanted the film to be about all these different things. And I told the distributor, like, you know, it's about, and it had all these things in it. Technically, but you know, it's drugs, drug addiction, angels, you know, outer space, you know, like it's sci-fi, there's all this different stuff, like what else, Hebrew and organ thieves, and it's horror, and it's like really not any of those things. Like, it's really not, they happen to all be tangentially connected to what I just said, but it's not. Anyway, and that was that.
So, what Did you, was that also shot on DV or on?
Yeah, that was okay. So Devil's Muse, everything I've done has been at least more since the shorts. Everything feature wise has been a couple different cameras at least, maybe three different cameras. So with Devil's Muse, there was they both had HD and DV elements, but DVX-100A was definitely my favorite camera. Yeah, yeah. So it was used on all those films.
Yeah,
The DVX was this Panasonic camera that shot 24p and was only standard def.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we shot with the HVX-200 also.
Yep.
And then the movie before that, we shot with the Vericam and the DVX. Okay. And then there was like, there was maybe some DV regular video stuff in there. I mean, I really like video.
Yeah.
So I really like crappy video. It was actually very interesting. Like, you know, we're talking about this David Lynch stuff. People always bring up his name. But you know, when he did Inland Empire, close friends of mine were like, dude, after all these people saying that you're copying him, he's copying you. And that's like, it was like, there's no fucking way, but like, I couldn't believe it. But it was very, the aesthetic of that film was more similar to my aesthetic, than his.
Yeah.
And that's probably why it wasn't a very good movie. I don't think Inland Empire was very good, but it was totally like, you know, it was one of my films.
Wow.
And he had people in it. He had Masumi in it and Kristen, and they were my friends, and it's really weird. You know,
yeah, but it is. So, yeah. It is really weird. So you mentioned In a Spiral State, it was had a distributor. Who did you
get? Yeah, so it was still with Halo 8. It's a hard conversation to have because I really love Halo 8, and the guy who ran the company is really cool. We didn't really have the best relationship after this, in a way, and some of it's due to me, some of it's just due to circumstances, nothing to do with anything else. I wouldn't say it's really the relationship, it's just circumstances. So I did a three-picture thing with them, for them, sort of as a negative pickup, but there was no, it's not like this is a big money deal. But the idea was, I really loved these guys, and I really believed in what they were putting out, and I still do. And I know that, you know, it was a big loss, I guess, for them, because as far as I know, these films did not really do very well for them. But they put out The Devil's Muse as a two-disc, and then they put out In a Spiral State. And the idea was that they would put out at least one other film. I think it was going to be two more films. That's where the three-picture deal started, was within A Spiral State.
Uh-huh.
So we were going to do the new Erotic, which is the documentary that I did.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too far ahead, but they were supposed to release that, and then they didn't. That was supposed to come out in like 2009, probably. Yeah, about 2009 it should have been released. We did a premiere for it, but it just sat on the shelf and different things. And I just recently got it released through Cinema Epoch, through their sister label, which is sort of a softcore and label called, I think they released it through Mongolian Barbecue. But anyway, long story short, it's not even out on DVD anyway, so there's no DVD of that documentary. But yeah, so that was the deal. I did work with them on Slumber Party Slaughterhouse, which I directed a segment of and worked on that. That was a film that a bunch of different Halo 8 directors directed segments on. And I acted in it too for Matt Bizzolo, who ran the company. Anyway, so that was the story. That was Halo 8. Halo 8 was a very cool company, though. They put out New York City Hardcore, NYHC. It's a documentary that was made by the guys who did Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yeah, yep.
They made that later, and they're the distributor that also put out Popskull, which is by Adam Wingard, who's an incredible director and a friend, and he's fucking amazing. And You're Next, if you haven't seen that, you should see it. But yeah, so I was in very good company. I was blessed to be on that label. I just, you know, people. I was also at the tail end of DVD.
Right.
Not only did I make really weird films, but they're weird films by a guy that you've never heard of. And since I didn't go the festival route, I think I learned. It's unfortunate because part of it's because I didn't want the rejection. And I didn't want to also spend all the money to submit the films.
Right.
But I guess it's unfortunate because maybe I would have gotten in to some festivals. I'm sure I probably would have. But I just you know, I didn't do it. So yeah. I didn't realize that that would have mattered, but I guess maybe it does. It's, again, I'm not trying to be jaded or, you know, positive or negative, but I don't know that, I think it's very arbitrary. It's up to, it's up to the masses to decide what they like. And most of the time the public likes really mediocre stuff.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Like there's nothing you can do about that. So you have to either cater to what, you know, like, a machine mentality. Like the best thing to do if you want to be successful, like in a really mainstream fashion, is like go to the supermarket, you know, watch what people eat, you know, look at what they eat, look at what they really do purchase. Most of it's processed, most of it has a lot of artificial ingredients in it, most of it is bland too, like there's no taste, they don't use spices, they don't buy as many sauces as you think. I mean, the sauce is the same ones. And it's the same way with movies. It's like people are just rehashing the same things and generally with some strange moralistic thing. I mean, it's all just bullshit dogma and like the same 1-2-3 act structure. I'm fucked because I can't think that way as much, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like I can totally relate to all this you're saying about being at the end of the DVD stuff, making weird, and also at the same time, making movies that were a little bit weird, or in your case, maybe a lot weirder than mine. But yeah, that's another reason I wanted to make sure to talk to you, because I know we were kind of going through that at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know? I still love, I mean, I, you know, maybe it's because of, you know, that Gen X, Gen Y, I'm sort of right between those two, kind of more Gen Y probably. But like for me, CDs and DVDs are like my media.
Yeah.
You know? Like I still buy CDs like crazy. My CD player in my car doesn't work. I'm like fucking freaking out. I want to get a new CD player for the car, which makes no sense probably to anybody on the fucking planet. But you know, I like, it's either that or I'm going to get a jam box and take it in my RAV4. I'm serious.
Yeah.
But you know, like DVDs are so great because yes, it's nice to have it on your phone and such, but there's something about the menus and all this stuff and having everything on one thing. It's not just the movie, you know, and that there's artwork and, you know, you could put it on your shelf. It's like treating a movie like a book, which now books are not being treated like books.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, in a way it's probably good because people need to, I mean, my bigger thing on a higher level is to, you know, get to a point where we, you know, talk about, well, hey guys, none of this exists anyway. Like, like the table that is right here that I'm touching is a complete construct, physical construct of this reality, which is not real. I mean, we're just electricity and consciousness. Like right now, I'm just electricity and consciousness floating in space talking to you.
Yeah.
Like another burst of bubble of electricity and consciousness. So,
yeah. Yeah. So after you did in a spiral state, and then what was, I guess, what was next after that? Were there a couple of things you got going? I know you did the documentary. We mentioned it already.
I wanted to do Telephone World. I actually had wanted to do that for a very long time.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'd wanted to do Telephone World for like, I don't know, a while. I actually did an interview with Movie Maker magazine at the time. It's weird. I got some like legit press. When the Devil's Muse, I got out there a bit. I was in Post magazine, and I can't even remember. I think I saved some of these. I was like, holy shit. I forget that I got some press like that. I don't think I used it, which is, I'm remembering that. That's pretty stupid. But the Telephone World project idea was one that I really, and in fact, it's one that I had argued with Werner Herzog about for a while. Werner Herzog and I were good friends. Like, I would talk to him, like, and go have coffee with him and, like, argue with him. And part of the reason I think we're friends is because I mean, it's sad because this is why I wish other things worked out with other people. But like, it's not like I have hero worship, like, or anything like that. I'm fully conscious when I talk to anybody that I talk to ever, that I'm talking to somebody who's going to die. No. Like, I'm going to die. Like everybody that I talk to is going to die. Yeah. So that puts us all in the same playing field. Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck who you are. I don't care if you're the king of the world or if you're armless and you have shit smeared all over your body. You're the same. the yeah. same. So, but anyway, so Werner and I were friends for a while, and he, like, I told him about this idea about Telephone World, which I want to do in one single take, and, you know, sort of this slow destruction of this woman, self-destruction of this woman, going through all these emotional things, all triggered by things that are happening on her phone.
Yeah.
Phone calls that are coming in, which it's sad, but these days I don't know if you'd get that many of the calls. It would probably be more like texts. But yeah. I think that when it's really important, a person still calls because they need that human connection. That's what it's about. So it took a long time, even though, again, it was a movie made for nothing, basically. It really was made. That's the lowest budget film that I've made. And it was partly because it was done in one single take. I think we did a run through, believe it or not. And then we shot it. But the live shot was, I mean, it was amazing. That's probably one of the greatest experiences in my life and as a filmmaker. And the actress is one of the greatest actresses that I've ever worked with in my life and probably ever will work with, Alyssa Dowling, who's now really getting all of her her very well-deserved attention because she's getting cast in a lot of great films.
Yeah.
She's a fantastic actress, and she pulls it off. It's basically about an actress in a reality show that you don't know you're watching, about an actress who just got a part in a reality show. And then, you know, her mom is calling her because her dad's dying, and her, you know, boyfriend wants to break up with her because she's being a totally selfish, you know, self-absorbed cunt, and he might be fucking somebody else. And, you know, so it's intense, and there's drugs and cutting and all this stuff that's very timely in the film. And I basically spoiled the film, but that doesn't matter because that's not the reason you'd watch it, if you'll watch it.
And so is it available? Can you watch it? Can you find it?
Yeah. Telephone World's actually very readily available right now. I dare you to watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. YouTube, a few other places. And you can also get on DVD from Amazon. But yeah, and I think there's some cool stuff on the DVD. I forget what I put on there as bonus features. On a couple of the movies that I have out, you can watch the 15-minute version of The Tunnel, by the way.
Okay.
But I don't think it's on The Tunnel. I mean, I don't think it's on Telephone World. Might and be.
Who released that one? Who released Telephone
World? Cinema Epoch.
Okay.
Cinema Epoch is the company that did...
okay.
They've done a bunch of films, but they released, I know they released Gozu by Takashi Miike, and that was one of the things that was like, okay, I like these guys.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so after Telephone World, what was next?
Well, again, concurrently was that documentary.
Okay, so you were working on it during that time.
Yeah, they were kind of had, they, you know, but I did the most amazing thing, which is this film called Noirland, which is probably what it still would be released as when I finish it. and it has the best cast I've ever had. Again, in keeping in the same style, it's sort of a follow-up to The Devil's Muse for me.
Right.
Thematically, it's very similar. And again, I got to really go more into the noir stuff. Film noir is a big aesthetic for me and is kind of in everything I've done.
Yeah.
And you can see it. But Noirland, like, obviously, is like all film noir. But James Duvall is in it. He's the lead.
Right.
He's fantastic. He's one of my favorite actors. I was a huge fan of his. So getting to cast him is similar to working with David Jay when I got to work with him on Devil's Muse, because I'm a huge fan of Bauhaus and Living Rockets. So those are that was incredible. The film is about basically a serial rapist killer who's a totally good-looking, cool guy who's split personality, and that's who he is. And it's about him being captured and kind of basically takes most of the time takes place in his head. Where he's basically, you're kind of getting into his dream world. I guess in some ways it echoes a certain level of sentiment and style from The Cell, that movie by Tarsem. Just it's sort of the structure of the very last act is almost the whole story. But I realized that later. I was like, wow, this is kind of similar in a way. It's just completely different in every other possible way.
Right.
But yeah, so in that film... has had a sort of spotty, weird editorial history because I started working with a very talented editor, Sean Kane, who's a great filmmaker and director in his own right, and did like kind of more sci-fi action films.
Right.
He and I cut it for a while, but we just couldn't really get it going. I have like 40 minutes of the film cut, mm-hmm. but it's not really where it should be at all, and what it should be like. So I'm gonna attempt to cut that very soon, I hope. Uh-huh. We wrapped that film in like sometime towards the middle or end of 2010.
Uh-huh.
So it's been a good 6 years.
Yeah.
So it's definitely time for me to get that one out.
Yeah. And will you be, when you can go take another run at cutting it, is Sean going to be doing it again, or are you going to cut it yourself?
I don't know that. I think that it's best. The very best thing is for me to cut it.
Yeah.
Because for me, a lot of this stuff is like still. It's weird how like these movies are. I swear to God, like if there's a secret to being young or staying young. It's like you do these movies. It's just you don't finish them. They stay fresh in your head though. Like yeah. it's fucking weird because yeah. you're still obsessed with it.
Right.
Like that Upside Downtown movie.
Yeah.
Like it's all in my head. Like yeah. it's in my head. Like if I had the video right now, I could cut it in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, with Noirland, it's sort of similar. The problem is I have a Mac, but my Mac, I worked with a really great guy, Mike Davis, who's this amazing post guy. Amazing, oh. amazing. And like people know who he is who know that name, but like he moonlights or daytimes or whatever sometimes at Digital Jungle, which is a place in West Hollywood. It's a digital post effects place or post place. But he bumped the movie up so that everything was in the highest whatever ProRes HQ stuff, yeah. and I can't like literally can't cut it in my Mac.
Yeah,
and so I don't know what I'm gonna do, but yeah, definitely whether it's me renting a laptop or borrowing a computer for a week or sitting someplace, that's gonna probably be the easiest way for me to do it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you up to this point like do you generally have someone else cut for you?
Yeah,
yeah.
I've pretty much well, yes and no. So even from the very beginning, because from the beginning, it was pretty much me cutting.
Right.
And so when I started working with other editors, I was like something on their shoulder the whole time. Like
right.
I sat with them and made, and so every cut and move was pretty much made by me.
Yeah.
Even when I worked with David, when we did the tunnel, and he'll remember this, but I mean, like 99% of it is me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I made every choice.
Yeah.
Bad choices, right? I'm just kidding. So a lot of them I did work on with editors, but then as time progressed, especially with stuff where I was like, okay, on this format I can do it on my computer, great. So yeah. I'm gonna cut it. So you know, the documentary I cut, The Neurotic.
Yeah.
Telephone World I cut. In a Spiral State, I was involved with editing, but Ken Cravens edited it. He's a very talented editor. But yeah, so now I would rather work with an editor.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times, but they have to be in the same mindset.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at. Because,
and the
like,
best editor I've worked
is
with,
specific. Yeah.
The very best editor I've worked with is Wes Pastor, the guy who did Devil's Muse, who's the one who's been nominated for all those Emmys I mentioned. Wes and I are friends. Wes probably hates me because I never have used him again. But that's, Wes, the reason I haven't used you is because I can't afford you. And I don't think that he wants money from me. I don't think that but I feel so downtrodden that I can't go to somebody who's
right.
like,
right.
maybe I'm asking you here, Wes, will you marry me? No, really. I mean, maybe I need to approach Wes. Maybe the secret is Wes should cut Noirland. I don't know
now.
But the point is, and I think he's even expressed interest. It's hard for me to ask people for favors anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like I can still do it. It's just the whole foundation of my work has been on favors.
Yeah.
And it's continued to be that way.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. If guys and gals out there, if you're still down to help a real true alien from outer space artist do stuff, and I will love you and make love to you or whatever you want, give you my soul, anything like that, no problem. Find me and help me. And I'll help you too.
Answer his plea. Yeah, because I'd like to see some of this stuff that you're talking about. Like, it's really, I mentioned in the beginning, I just really have been a fan of your take on things. Mm-hmm. I really dig the way you do things. So
New Orleans. And so at what point, so you're working on the documentary during all this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess at what point does your career start to sort of turn or take on a different aspect?
So, okay, so that's a very tasteful way to say it. So in a way, when I did that documentary, I was already very, this is very interesting because it was an organic thing that kind of happened.
Yeah.
And I'm very much, I will admit it because it's been told to me, but I'm very much a savant type of person. I really am, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's weird because if you say you are, then there's no way you could be, but I'm on off. I could be that it's multiple personality disorder. I'm not sure. I've never gone to a therapist, never gone to a psychiatrist yeah. in my life. That's one thing I definitely love that my parents did not subject me to is probably for the best. Anyway, for me at least. But so with my films and my art and my mind and my personal life, I guess was very, I never really, never really thought about it, but there were all these very erotic elements.
Yeah.
Even in my movies, I think I didn't realize it because, I mean, a lot of times for me, it's really, God, it's so hard to explain. Like, I don't know if it's not so much that I want to shock people because that's not interesting to me.
Yeah.
It's sort of a transcendence kind of thing. It's a, you sort of transcend what you're seeing and yeah. anything, like, take people out of reality.
Okay.
But also I love, I absolutely, like, I'm unbelievably in adoration of and fascinated with women uh-huh. and with the idea of sex and with the idea of love, and all these different aspects therein and gender and who we are and masculinity and all this stuff. And I mean, and also I was very like, it's like I've never freaking never was a, like an athlete or really got interested in sports or even working out and stuff. I did play soccer. I was a good soccer player in junior high, almost high school. I just didn't really get interested in it. But I was never really so much interested in the body that way, but I was interested in erotica. Uh-huh. And when I did this documentary, I'd already had made friends with the people who were in the film. They were my friends. No. I mean, they were my friends. Some of them were my friends, basically. For the most part, most of them were my friends even before I started making the film, which is one of the problems that, that the distributor, I guess, had because they thought that it was a fluff piece, which I felt like that was the whole point. There are no films that treat people who make porn and adult entertainment like human beings, like artists, like filmmakers, right. and maybe make a fluff piece about them.
Yeah,
why does
yeah.
it have to be negative? Why does it have to even have two sides to it? Why does it have to be anything?
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, but my point was... it just kind of happened, and I became interested in it, and then I made friends with some people who were in it, who I was like, well, you know, I was already getting interested in photography, and I'd shot some stuff, and then somebody who was over at Fox Magazine, which was at the time still a pretty popular adult magazine, was like, I like your work, and, you know, and I didn't use strobes, or I lit it like I would light a movie, you know,
yeah.
with, like, airy lights and LEDs and different things, maybe a Kino. And so anyway, so then suddenly I was publishing, I was never a published photographer before. I became a published photographer in Fox Magazine. I sold a number of sets to them. In that time frame, I also started a, sort of a working relationship with this girl, Casey Starr, who is no longer in adult. We're still very good friends. She's a mom now and she lives out of state. But she's an amazing, super sweet girl. We never did anything that was fully sexual. Like, no. I mean, it was sexual, but there was no sex involved. There
right.
was no penetration of any kind.
Gotcha.
My penis did not enter her in any way.
Yeah.
But we did all these posy shots and stuff, and it was sort of like, that was kind of experimenting with the whole thing
yeah.
To start with, but also to start creating this thing, which was this mystery thing, which is really me finding a way to put a label on my style.
Yeah.
But I started it with the most extreme stuff that I've been doing.
Yeah.
In some ways, this brand, this hashtag mystery brand, all caps, which is who my identity these days
yeah.
is all marked with that on social media. You know, that's really everything. It encompasses all my work and all of who I am
yeah.
and life, because that's, to me, that's what life is a giant, gigantic, ever unfolding in every direction mystery. That's
yeah.
it. You can say whatever the fuck you want, God, you know, Big Bang, whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking, whatever you think it is, it doesn't fucking matter. You can't do anything about it. You can just exist. Yeah. That's good enough.
Yeah.
So sex is a big part of existence. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the biggest part of existence, of all existence. All existence in every way, down to the molecular, you know, level. So eventually I got very involved with that, and then I decided I wanted to go full force, and just it kind of became just evolved. I mean, I made these films, starting kind of with a softcore film called Nerdy Girls, which was released with 3D with 3D glasses, and did pretty decently. And then I followed it up with Mystery World of Sex, which was originally entitled Mystery World, the distributor added of sex, but it kind of also started to get more, a little bit more hardcore. It has video elements with me and Casey, but it also had like other people in it, but there wasn't any sex in it still. So that was a progression in the work that I was creating.
Yeah.
And all the while I was also starting to act and stuff for other people, which has only more recently started to happen more, as I'm at least at this time, agency represented. My other identity is over at ATMLA, which is a very, very prominent and well-known adult entertainment agency, performer agency. And but anyway, so the film after I did that was called Mystery Girl. Now, Mystery Girl, which is kind of funny. I mean, again, there are less porn reviewers out there than there are indie film reviewers and stuff. But, you know, it probably is the highest rated film of mine, like, that I've ever made.
Yeah.
People really like it. That makes me happy. It's one thing that makes me, it makes it tough for me to want to leave a lot of the adult entertainment stuff, is that I'm making people happy, and that some people find the work to be incredible, brilliant, amazing, genius. And so
that's I've seen some of those reviews, and I was
so it makes me happy. And so I'm, you know, I'm very open to anything, because I'm very, the thing that's hard to explain is, and maybe you can tell this because we're talking, but I like, objectivity is huge. It's objective, it's like constantly fluctuating between objective and the objective and the subjective. And it's hard for me, but it comes from being an artist and comes from being an observer.
Yeah.
So when I, and it's something I found to be very interesting with other performers, other people who are adult performers, we talk about it during our scenes. I have, at least, because I bring it up because I'm weird, but you know, I ask if, you know, do you ever feel out of body, you know, like when you're doing this, because you kind of, you know, and for me, and a lot of times, I guess that's the way to look at it, is you're sort of dissociating in a way, but you're also not dissociating so much. It's something people cannot understand who are not inside it. It's just like acting. It's just like anything else. To do anything well in an art medium, you kind of have to, like, not be there in a way. It's like being, it's like, yes, it's about being there. It's obviously being about being present, but also about being, like, maybe 5 feet away.
Right.
And for me, as a filmmaker and a photographer, because more and more over time, the cinematography and photography elements of filmmaking have become more and more my thing. Like, I shot a lot of all of my movies, really.
Yeah.
Yes, there are other DP. There's a DP usually credited, but I shot, like, usually half the film. So with porn, it's the same thing. You know, like, I think it's about being able to be objective enough to see what's good. It's not about having a good time. If you want to have a good time, you have sex with your partner, your best friend, your girlfriend, your wife, your lover, your boyfriend, whatever it is. You know, this is about creating an experience for the watcher.
Yeah.
Not for the person who's performing. So one of the most common things is, a lot of people are like, oh man, dude, you're so disgusting. You know, you do this stuff now. I can't believe you're doing this. And you're doing it because you just want to fuck these girls and all this. And it's like, absolutely not. That's not why I'm doing it. It may sound really strange, but no, I'm doing this partly to get that reaction from you, you know, or another reaction or whatever. But most of it is to create this experience of sex and sexuality in a way that's like, I can't believe that that's me in the first place. I'm so out of body that I'm like, wow, I can't, is that me? I did that?
Yeah.
Wow, that's so weird. And it's not that weird. Whoever you are that's listening to this, in a few minutes, you're going to go to the bathroom and you're going to pull your wiener out and you're going to put it in your hand and you're going to piss, or you're going to take a dump and you're going to, like, wipe your ass. And guess what? Shit is not a big deal either. It's what you ate. It's the food you ate. It's coming out of your body. The blood inside you is not disgusting either. It's in you. Everything is in us. Cancer is in us. Everything is in us. There's no need to be afraid of any of it. Explore all of it. Just do it objectively. Don't do it to hurt each other or to hurt yourself, but look at everything. Fuck, I mean, to me, like, a rose is just as beautiful as a booger. I mean, it's just how you look at it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not to sound silly, but, like, that's the beauty of it. And really, the ultimate thing is now, saying all this, this is where what I'm trying to take away from these things is what I'm trying to bring to my next, quote, mainstream project, or something that could be greater in scope than, a porn film or a horror film or a documentary or anything.
Right.
Ultimately for me, the greatest film, I've said this numerous times, but, the greatest film of all time, and really there are only two probably, but, Enter the Void is number one. Number one. And number two, I guess, would be It's a Wonderful Life. And that's it. And they're both very similar to me, Yeah, one may have X-rated content in it and be really provocative, but the other one's provocative for its time as well.
Yeah.
Both films go everywhere. They go in every fucking direction, thematically. They take you to all these places and all these parts of human existence, of life, of what we go through, of dying, of being in love, of being sexually attracted to somebody, to be just everything, of losing hope, of society. Society is a construct. It's all these rules and ideas and stuff. They're just things that have helped people get along within their small tribes. It's all bullshit. For me, I want to make a film that transcends like those films do. It's just hard. And so I've been ruminating. So yeah. I guess the adult stuff is sort of diversion in a way, but it's also been a way for me to go into a place that's so extreme and so untalked about and so different that maybe I can come out of it a different person. And the weird thing is I'm allowing it all to be out there. I mean, my family knows about it. It's not good. Maybe I'm hurting people in a way. I hope not. Yep. But ultimately, by being more open about everything and letting all the lines come back together and showing that it's all arbitrary too, like who you are, what you look like, your name. I mean, I'm in better shape than I ever was. Like, I mean, I go to the fucking gym. It's ridiculous. Like, I never was that person, And it's not like I am. I'm all these people. Yeah. Anybody is everybody. We're all, which is why we watch movies. We want to watch the every man, the every woman.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's I really want to do something bigger. So ultimately, the best film would be a film that has everything in it, like sex too. Yeah, can have sex in it. Why can't actors have sex in regular mainstream movies? I don't understand. And why is it such a big deal, that, like with a film like Nymphomaniac, that they have to go in and say that they didn't have sex in the movie? They had sex in the movie. Why do you have to lie and say that you created all these digital effects? Yeah, some of it's digital effects, but a lot of it's real.
Yeah.
I mean, the penetration, some of it's real. So what? Is it so shameful? I mean, I don't understand. If it's shameful, then don't have sex anymore, you disgusting humans. Stop fucking and stop making babies. Please.
Yeah, it's a good point. So when you started in the adult, doing the adult things, was it always the intent to act in them as well, or and develop that sort of persona, or how did that sort of
come about? The truth of that is no. Well, sort of yes and no. It's like a means to an end.
Yeah.
For me, I had to create separate identities in general. Like, they're all separate identities.
Yeah.
And so when the films were being directed, it was Mr. E, which was a great way to introduce my thing, the Mr. E thing, the hashtag mystery. And then the other part of that, though, is that, with the performer name, that had to come up because I didn't want to be perceived as one of these guys who's just the dude that's doing all this stuff. And a lot of times it wasn't me anyway, so it was like somebody else that was shooting for me. A lot of my stuff is shot by women. The only people usually that are on my set that are my photographers that I've worked with, like my friend Mary Jane and April Flores also shot for me, and a couple other people. And But yeah, the idea was that where Brock Doom came out of was kind of sort of as a joke in a way. I mean, the name definitely was a very referential kind of postmodern take on a porn star name.
Yeah.
You know, taking the Brock thing as like Biff, you know, or like right. a super tough white guy yeah, name yeah. that also sort of sounds like multi-ethnic. It could be whatever. You don't yeah. really know, but it has a dumb, tough sound right. to it.
Yeah.
And I got it from Boogie Nights too, because it was like, yeah. you know, which is hilarious. So it's like referencing something that's referencing something.
Right. right.
And then Doom, you know, came from, you know, a number of things. First of all, it's very masculine, very destructive, very tough, but it's also all the, my hip hop stuff that I like, you know, and,
yeah.
And people like MF Doom and Dr. Doom and all that, and comic books as well.
Yeah.
As Cool Keith and all that hip hop stuff. But, you know, it was really more because it made sense that that it would be, again, creating that level of objectivity.
Yeah.
You know, and letting those, that way those identities can exist separately.
Yeah.
You know, and social media is incredible because you can create, you can actually create all these different identities in social media.
Right.
And then keep them going concurrently. And then eventually let them all know that it's all you. It doesn't matter. It's just sort of letting people have a choice to choose who to follow if they want
right.
to.
Right.
And so it's, which again, it reinforces that it's sort of an act, you yeah. know, or is it? It's not that, it's an act in the way it's being presented, but it's all real in every other way. But it also allowed me to start working because, I mean, a lot of this is also for work. I mean, yeah. I hate to say it, but like a lot of this is also because I need extra money. I mean, I've had regular day jobs and things like that, but I always was looking for a way to make money in media,
yeah.
you know, and, adult entertainment gave me the opportunity, especially as a, really, especially as an actor. I mean, I've started working, I've done a lot of non-sex work, which yeah. is, which is what you call acting, the yeah. acting in porn movies. And I've it's funny. I know that, I think they trip out cause they're like, you're fucking amazing. But it's like, well, I come from indie films. So, you know, so I may, the long and short of this, strangely enough, is that I may do more acting too.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm just about breaking boundaries and changing people's perceptions and tripping people out. I mean, and so this is one of the ultimate ways I can do it. I mean, you know, I'm not that gross. I don't do scat porn or, you know, I don't do stuff with shit or I don't kill people. I don't do snuff. I don't do anything like that. You know, And I probably wouldn't, you know, like if that was culturally okay, I probably wouldn't go that far. But I'm interested in going the furthest reaches, you know. I mean, it's just like, how can you talk about something also unless you know it, you know? Right. And it was the real other thing was, and I have yet to really promote this way until now. But the real thing was I also had believed so much in my documentary. I forgot, you know, I don't know why I forgot to mention this, but I'd believed so much in my documentary at the time and it had been shelved basically by my distributor was that, you know, I wanted, to show the world like, wow, you know, basically indie film, you know, if there was a headline, it would be like indie filmmaker believes in documentary so much he turns into a porn star, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's basically like, you know, I believed in these people so much and how good they are and what it is and how important it is and how cool it is and how it's not a big deal and how it is beautiful and whatever, that I decided to go into that world over the course of almost 7 years, 6 years, something like that,
yeah.
which is a very long time in that business. Sort of still somehow on the fringes a lot of times,
right.
Which is where I like to be in general, up until very recently where I played Donald Trump in a VR porn thing that has been seen everywhere. And they apparently they presented it at the RNC convention to him. It's like, it's been seen by millions and millions and millions of people in the world. It's pretty funny. It's not my best performance, but that's the whole point of it. Cause it's supposed to be bad. Cause it's Donald Trump.
Right.
So it's pretty funny. But my point is, you know, I wanted to not be a poser, quote, yeah. and at the same time do things, you know, like other people are so ballsy and there's so many filmmakers, it's very interesting, especially when it comes to sex, who are like, you know, my movie's like this or whatever, like, and look, basically they're just paying hookers to, like, you know, they might have hooker girlfriends, do whatever. I mean, but the point is, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that guy. I'd rather be the hooker. I'll be that hooker, you know. I don't believe in that kind of elitist mentality. And I'm one with the people. You know, I share my birthday with Pasolini. I'm fucked. You know, I'm crazy. I'm probably going to get shot in the back of my head just like Pier Paolo Pasolini.
I share mine with Noah Gaspard.
Oh, I love that man.
Yeah, yeah. So
we both have that going for us.
Very cool.
So once you sort of create the Brock Doom persona and then start, like, what I've noticed is you started, I don't know how long ago you actually started doing this, but you sort of have your own, I guess, for lack of a better word, brand of Brock Doom stuff that you put up. And there are, I'd seen the reviews. I mean, you do have a legion of fans and followers that are into it. What was it like sort of establishing yourself in that world and, like, getting people to come see your shit, you know, like, in a world that's, like, I mean, if anything's any more saturated than indie film, I would imagine it would be porn. You know what I mean? There's just so much out there to...
Yeah, but I think it's what's interesting is, and I knew this early on, is that with porn, it's, it's the same as any other kind of media. But, you know, like all the genres, there's a lot of stuff that's not represented.
Okay.
And that's where you come in. I mean, as soon as... it's basically, in some ways, you're exploiting yourself, you know, but so is anything. So is
right.
All art is exploitation, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, if I, you know, I'm Palestinian. I was born in Saudi Arabia. Have I talked about this before? Oh, I just talked about it now. Now, those are political things.
Yeah.
If I decided tomorrow to wear either one of those things as my thing,
yeah.
you know, that I'm a Palestinian filmmaker or that I was born in Saudi Arabia, and I make that my story, I could... I mean, that's the fastest way to any kind of whatever attention.
Yeah, totally.
But that's bullshit. Yeah. You know, who cares?
Yeah.
So for me, it's more about looking for, so still, again, exploitation, yes, but looking for who you are and just saying, let's see, are people into this?
Yeah.
And it was kind of a, I told friends of mine that it sounds messed up, but it's great that it's on a show called Barely Making It. But, you know, I said that, you know, in order for, part of it was for me to come back hardcore as a filmmaker and artist. I'm, you know, I'm fairly close to being ready to, like, come back, like, big, you know?
Yeah.
But I said that in order for me to feel better about myself and to build up my self-esteem, I had to start, like, from ground zero, maybe below.
Yeah.
And so this was how I did it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just real. I mean, it sounds weird, but, like, as fabricated as a lot of it is, I'm also very real as to who I am and what I'm like.
Yeah.
And so I found a lot of people to like that. And this sounds strange too, but in, you know, all I'm not going to talk about anything that's been said about him or whatever, but, you know, I've known James Dean for a long time and consider him a friend. And he, early on, before any of his stuff, whatever, I don't even really look at his work so much as I know that, you know, kind of a thing that he presents in his work. And it's very similar to my, what makes who I am, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
So, and, you know, he had his site and his persona is basically just kind of a regular guy who he is and, like, a nice guy and a guy who doesn't have much really to pretend to be anything else than who he is and, like, not the most ripped guy, not the most in shape guy, you know, but he's a good-looking guy. So, I don't know if I'm a good-looking guy, but it was sort of that element of, like, regular guy, you know, doing naughty, crazy things with, like, you know, gorgeous girls. And a lot of my brand and aesthetic is sort of, you know, I see beauty in so many different kinds of people, including a lot of different kinds of girls. So a lot of it, and I definitely have a very punk kind of, I guess, I hate the word alternative because it's, like, alternative to what? Everything is an alternative to everything else. But, you know, like, so there's, you know, girls with tattoos and dyed hair and girls who are bigger and tiny girls and, you know, black girls, white, whatever. You know, I love everybody. And so there's and a lot of real attraction and there's like real, it's really intimate and really hot. And, you know, like I'm really all about female pleasure when it comes to making adult films and performing in adult films. So. Just a note.
Cool. And it's funny, it's interesting you mentioned that because I know in the reviews that I read about your stuff, that came up a lot. That was something that a lot of people called out. And they could see that in the work. Let's talk about the new stuff that you have going on, like the synthesis of all this that you're working on.
Yeah, so although I have another like adult film that will come out some point soon called Mystery Days, I've been really more focused and concerned with coming back with, you know, kind of narrative and narrative filmmaking and doing some stuff actually for the festival circuit and such. So there are actually a few projects, all in various stages, one of which I'm ready to get going on pretty soon, which is Bleeding Hearts. Bleeding Hearts is a film that I raised money on on Kickstarter successfully, actually, back in 2009, and have had the money. Actually, I spent the smallest bit of it. I think the money's actually still there. It's not that much money, but it's a small budget. But it's this micro budget feature, and I haven't really had the brains to get it together until now. So we're working on that. Bleeding Hearts is going to be a bit of an end of the world movie. It's really hard for me to explain. I don't want to spoil any of it, but it is a bit of an end of the world movie. That's going to be very exciting. I'm going to cast that very soon and hopefully be shooting that early this fall, if not sooner, maybe even. And then the other film, which I really hope to get going on, I got to launch some sort of crowdfunding campaign for, as a film by this great writer who I've been working with for geez, about that long, since about 2010. I want to say 2010, 2011. I think maybe 2011. Jason Whittier, who's a great writer. You may be friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah, you should
be friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah, I think I
am. Jason's written, and I think also produced at least one of them, has written several films that are good, really good horror films and thrillers that have gotten some distribution. He had a couple of movies that have come out that have gotten, you know, out to Walmart and Best Buy and stuff like that. And I really liked him, and I get a lot of cold email submissions, weirdly enough. Like, I get them all the time. Not so much, not quite as much anymore, but I still get them.
Yeah.
And I would, like, never read them. I read his on accident just because I wanted to prove to myself how bad these submissions were. And then it was, like, amazing. We got in touch, and actually had a couple different scripts, and then this is one of them. We've been trying to get it going for a while. And I had a reading for it with James Duvall and some other actors. So we'll see what happens. But that's the other one. And then lastly, there's an anthology film that I've been involved with producing that is a project that me and Jason Cartalian is a filmmaker, a very talented filmmaker, made a movie called Seahorses, which, by the way, is on iTunes that you should rent and check it out. Jason had this idea to make this film called Sex from A to Z. And he and I will be putting together a team of filmmakers, perhaps yourself, to direct segments in it. And it's, again, sex from A to Z. It'll be very funny. Sort of think of a kind of a postmodern new version of, you know, like Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, you know, meets like, you know, the ABCs of Death or something.
Yeah.
But like, it's nothing like that. Yeah. So that's going to be very fun. I'm going to direct one of the segments as well. So that should be cool. So yeah, that's it. Hopefully I'll do some more music videos and some other stuff. I really want to just start directing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it probably won't be the end of Brock Doom for too long. It might already have been the end for Ramsey Abed, but Ramsey Abed is coming back and Brock Doom might stick around for like a minute or two, but not much longer. So, but there are going to be a lot of other identities. So not just in that stuff, because I have music, hip hop stuff, and electronica and art also that I'm going to try to do. And I think it'll just be fun. For a minute, I thought, well, I just kind of just know every single one of them will have a different name and identity.
Yeah.
And I just have to honor that what I've started.
Right.
And just, you know, and David Bowie, may he rest in peace, dear God, is a huge inspiration on a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
It was, I didn't realize it really till later before he died, as how inspirational he was to how I think. David Bowie's huge inspiration, all the creating all these different personas that he created was a big part of it for me.
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, I appreciate you talking to me. I mean, it's a great talk. I can't wait to get this up. I can't wait for people to listen to it.
It's pretty awesome. Crazy. I hope people enjoy
this
it.
Is exactly the zone.
Yeah,
so to wrap it up, like, I guess, do you want to just run back through like where people can find your stuff?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, definitely if you go on Amazon,
You can just look up Ramzi Abed, R-A-M-Z-I-A-B-E-D, on Amazon, or for that matter, you can just Google me. That's probably the best thing to do, is just put quotes in and Google Ramzi Abed. That way you'll find it. You'll actually pretty much find everything. If you are interested in the more explicit stuff, you can go to brockdoom.com. I forewarn you that that is explicit. But otherwise, yeah, please go to Amazon, go to YouTube, go to Google, look up my stuff, watch the movies, especially watch The Devil's Muse, which is downloadable on Amazon. And if you have Amazon Prime, you should check out Telephone World. Whether you'll like that movie or not is up to you.
I highly recommend you check it all out. All of it. It's all interesting in its own way, for sure. And I really support what you're doing, man. Like, I really enjoy it, and I'm glad that you're still doing it. And have a few cool things coming, you know. Like I said, I've been following you for a while, so I feel like you're kind of a kindred spirit in a way.
Likewise, I've followed you as well, and really, really thank you for having me on here. And yeah, more power to us all.
Yep.
Power to the people.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks very much. Brilliant. All right, guys. Talk to you soon. Okay, just going to jump in here one more time before the ending fanfare to reiterate the ways to give. If you would like to donate to Ramzi and help him get back on his feet via PayPal, you can send funds to bloodshot@msn.com. That's bloodshot@msn.com, and that's via PayPal. If you want to do the GoFundMe, if you go on GoFundMe, the page is called Brock Doom versus Apartment Fire. And the picture is of Ramzi sitting on a couch with his hands bandaged. And I'll actually have links for both of these in the description. Thanks for listening, and please help out if you can.
Is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by BMoviesandEbooks.com.
You're in a zombie apocalypse. You have one weapon, and it's not a gun. What is it?
Like a scythe,
a car.
Grenades.
Like a flare gun, maybe.
Piranhas.
Bat.
A bat?
Baseball bat.
Hands down, machete.
It's obviously a lobo.
Loppers?
Slingshot.
Yeah!
Like a ground-mounted slingshot that shoots bricks.
Catch the 7 Deadly Questions on The Basement on a Hill. Hear all new episodes every Tuesday. The Basement on a Hill. Horror and comedy for people who hate horror comedies.